Hi there, I'm board-certified professional organizer Kathy Burns. I'm really glad you're here. This podcast is designed for busy entrepreneurs just like you who want to take better control of your business and move forward with less stress and more success. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. The Organize Energize podcast is produced for your enjoyment, and show notes are found at thepodcast.organizeandenergize.com. Come back often and feel free to add this podcast to your favorite RSS feed or iTunes. You can also follow me on Twitter at Organize Energy and Facebook. All links are in the show notes. Now let's get into the show. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm so happy you're here. Today, my guest is Ellen Finkelstein. She is an expert. She's an expert who teaches experts how to build an online business that gets their knowledge out to the world, including how they can maximize their income with better messaging, succeed at email marketing, and build their audience and create their product or their program. I know some of you out there are looking on creating products or programs, so this is a good podcast for you. Today, we're going to find out how to build how to find a business model that's simple and effective with Ellen. So join me and we will jump right into it. Hi, everyone. As promised, I am with my girlfriend, Ellen Finkelstein, and we're going to talk about messaging because you know what? When you start a business, you kind of need to know what to say. And most importantly, as I've been noticing as of late, you have to get in the mind of the person. So we're talking to an expert today. Thanks for coming on the show, Ellen.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So talk to me a little bit about your journey into copywriting and messaging and putting yourself out in the world online.
So I think I started writing these books before I actually had what I would call an online business. And it was perfect for me. I had little kids at home, and it was one of the few jobs at that time, you know, this is like 38 to 40 years ago, which is around the age of my kids, you know, you know, you couldn't just have a job online or that kind of thing. And so I could write books, and I wrote these several books, one on AutoCAD, which is a drafting program, and several on that, and on PowerPoint and Flash, which doesn't exist anymore. But it was something work that I could do at home. And that big book up at the top there, the last edition of it was like 1,300 pages. This is a humongous book.
Wow.
And yeah, that's the 17th edition of it. And it was translated to all these languages and everything. But I got, and this was pretty standard, that was Wiley and Sons, and McGraw-Hill was my other publisher. And at any rate, they gave me 10% royalty. They gave me it in advance, and when that was kind of, I earned that, I would get the 10% royalty on the wholesale price of the book. Now, that full price of that book was $50, but on Amazon, where they sold most of them, was $30. So, you know, half of that is $15. So I would get $1.50 per book. Uh-huh. And it just sounded like crazy, you know. Now that book sold, it wouldn't have gone into 17 editions if it hadn't sold well. It sold really well all around the world. And though all of those books together made the down payment for a house. So like, I'm not complaining.
Nice.
But it was at a time when the internet kind of thing was just happening, and the publishers started saying that authors had to have a, quote, platform. And a platform mm-hmm. meant basically like a blog and an email list. Mm-hmm. And so I did that. That was my first website in 1999. And I started realizing that, you know, I would get like $1.50 per book, you know, that I could write my own little ebook. Mm-hmm. And once I had a list, I could go promote it to them, and I could sell the ebook. You know, the people who read these books were professionals. You know, they used AutoCAD or PowerPoint in their job, and so they could spend $20 on an ebook. You know, that wasn't like a high price or anything like that. And I got to keep like $18.50 of it, or something like that. You know, whatever PayPal took out of it, but you know, compared to $1.50, and so I just realized that I could do that. And so I was blogging, and I started a newsletter, and I started writing my own ebooks, and I sold thousands of them, you know, over time. The way I did it at that time wouldn't have given me like another down payment, you know, but it was still eye-opening for me. And that's how I started my business, realizing that I had my own audience and I had my own platform. And so I could create my own products.
Interesting. That is very interesting. So you were writing tech self-help books way back in the day.
I you know, these books were, I mean, AutoCAD specifically is a, at that time, I don't even know what it costs now, but it was, they do it on subscription, but it was a $4,000 program. So it was a, you know, it was a big investment for our company, and they had to have one version for each person who was using it, which was often, you know, a group of people. So it was a big investment, and it was difficult. They had good help, but you needed a book.
Absolutely. I'm going to take a pause right now. I'll be right back. Just realized my monitor is not plugged in. I remember I'm not getting charged. Aha. To blame that on one of my kittens. I'm looking at my power cord and my computer's like, I'm going to sleep. And I'm like, okay, no. All right. So we'll edit that out, obviously.
Yes.
Okay, let me get back to that. So writing tech manuals and that type of thing was kind of your claim to fame in the beginning. Did you have a technical background at the beginning of it all when you were writing this, your first book?
Well, yeah, you had to. I mean, you can't just write a book on AutoCAD unless you know AutoCAD. And so I had, before that, I had been in a place where I had learned AutoCAD and used it in my job. So I knew it pretty well. I still learned a lot to, you know, go through a whole program, like everything that's in it,
Yeah.
and write a book. Even the first edition was 800 pages. It was crazy.
That's amazing. So you're in multiple languages, multiple countries, and you're in your 17th edition. That's incredible. So when people are starting out in business, and I know that that's your love right now is to help people that are emerging. So for all of you out listening to this, if you're starting, I hope you do listen about the messaging part. So what would you tell your clients when they're just branching out, fledgling, getting ready to start their business? What advice do you give them around their story and their topic?
Yeah, actually, something you said at the very beginning, that you have to get into the shoes of your audience. And so when somebody, when you're an expert at something and you want to get that knowledge out to the world, you're very invested, involved in what you know, but you're not really thinking about why other people would want to know that and what their problem is and what their pain point is and their point of view. And I can give you a couple of stories of, let's say, somebody who wanted to help people create ethical decisions. It's a little bit of an amorphous kind of thing, but she had a worksheet, and it was, you know, it was something valuable to do it. And so I said, so what's their problem? Like, why do they want this? And she said, well, their problem is that they don't have a mechanism, a means to make ethical decisions, like a procedure for it. And I went, but they don't know that. They don't realize that that's the reason they're making wrong decisions, or they, whatever. They don't know that. And so it's a good example of seeing it from the, from your point of view. Another example of someone who was helping people with a leaky gut. And so she would, that was her messaging, leaky gut. But the people who have leaky gut don't know they have leaky gut. They know they're having bloating, or, you know, digestive problems, or whatever it might be. And so you always, you do have to put yourself in that person's shoes. And you ha I like the expression pain point as opposed to problem, because they might not know what the real problem is that you know, but they know their pain point, and you might not know their pain point. You might not know what they're, so you have to really focus in on that right messaging, so that they understand that you can help them.
I love that, you know, because it's not like, oh, I want to fix my leaky gut. It's like, I want to stop being in pain all the time. I want to stop this continual pressure and da 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 da. Like, what are they really seeking? And yeah, I agree. They might not even know they have leaky gut. You know, it's so easy for us to get so close to our message that I think it really helps to have people like you to be an objective observer, just like with organizing. You know, I can go in and say, oh, I see that, because we don't see it when we live in it, and we don't see it when we say it all the time, you know, to our audience. So, you know, the skill of having someone outside looking in is, I think, hugely important. So tell me a story about one of your students that came and what they ended up with at the end of their message.
So the second example I gave was this woman with leaky gut, and she started changing her message around the symptoms. and was able, absolutely able to sell more of her. She has actually specific physical products that she sells, like tinctures and things that she creates. And she's a forager, which means she forages for things and she makes things out of them. But she also has
Interesting.
courses. Yeah, it is interesting. And I just actually just today, one of the people that I did a messaging consultation with, and she helps people. Again, this isn't really an online business at all. Some of these aren't, but she helps people create an environment around their house, like landscaping, but something that makes you feel really comfortable being outside and enjoying that outside. And she's all for like the psychological benefits that you get from it. And so we talked about not only just sort of that something's pretty or that something's makes you feel better, that there are all sorts of various different reasons that people want to have an environment that they can really enjoy. And we talked about, which is something I don't do very often, but we talked about local marketing for her because she's actually like going there and doing this for people. And
Right.
she has just recently gotten like these awards. I just had I just emailed her actually about it because
She got an award for her landscaping?
well, it was, yeah, something like that. Let me just
Or is a small business owner, perhaps?
no, it was specifically around landscaping. I don't know
Interesting.
if I'm going to find it, but at any rate, oh, here it is. Here it is. So she said her company, my company, has been recognized with the Neighborhood Fave Award 3 times between 2022 and 25 from
Nice.
subscribers to the app Nextdoor. Well, so that was one of the things I told her. I don't know if you know what Nextdoor is.
Absolutely. Yep. I
Maybe
tell
people.
all my clients to go on to next
Yes,
door.
yes, yes, yes. And so I told she hadn't even thought of that, and I told her to go to Nextdoor. And so she's gotten these little award things there, Outdoor Living Space Transformation Champions of the Year 2025 USA from Lux Life Magazine, a Best of
Nice.
Awards winner by whatever, and a whole bunch of things that she's gotten, based on this new messaging and these new avenues that where she could promote. I said,
Right.
when you do a landscaping for somebody, how landscapers do it. They put up a sign, landscaped by, make signs, let people see it. This very local kind of marketing.
Yeah. That's interesting. So whenever you decided, hey, I'm gonna, well, your publisher said you've got to start a blog, you've got to start messaging and that type of thing. What was the biggest obstacle that you found back then when you started to launch your online presence?
I knew nothing.
Well, most of us don't when we
Yeah.
start.
Just so this was I the first website was 1999. There was not a lot out there. It was before WordPress, for example. So I taught myself HTML and co hand coded that little bugger thing. I don't know what to say. It was just hard. It was hard. And I also remember I did that for 2 or 3 years before I actually sold my first ebook. And figuring out how to sell something off your website, like the technology of it, was also just, I had to do so much research. And I felt like I was very alone at the time. I wasn't a member of a group. I was just sort of starting out. My kids were little, all of that. So I think for me, it was just figuring everything out on my own. And, it's not like I don't have. AutoCAD is a technical program, okay? So I have some technical background, but I had never done any programming or something like that, anything like that. I still am not a programmer.
What
So,
advice? Oh, so go on.
no, it was just that it was hard and I had to struggle through it.
What advice would you give her now, that you've been there, done that?
So definitely get help. Yeah, don't try to figure it out all on your own. I have seen people, and this is always sad, struggle for months to try to figure out the littlest thing that I know I could give them, tell them in 5 minutes, what to do. I remember reading somebody on something I put on social media about having a free offer. And, so do you have one? I said, no, I just found out a few months ago that I'm supposed to have one. I'm still trying to figure it out. That's like months. That's crazy. You should be able to get something like that done in a few days.
And I mean, that's why, one of the chapters in my first book is Masters Hire Masters. I remember at the beginning of my career trying to do web tech stuff, and that is way not my wheelhouse. And I would cry. I would be crying to my husband, going, "I can't believe I don't know how," And here I am immersed in the crap of my business that I have no reason to be there. So you've got to, say your own in your own wheelhouse. I think that's great advice, Ellen, for sure. So, since you're a systems girl, I know you are, what's your favorite organizing hack? What do you rely on all the time that helps you get through your work day or your work week?
So, since you're a Google person, my calendar, my Google calendar, I live by my calendar. And so, I'll tell you a very specific thing that people don't do that you can do. So, people put appointments like this is an appointment. We had a time for us to do this, and it's on my calendar. But people often don't put their tasks on their calendar. And so, what they're doing is like they're scheduling their calendar for other people, to satisfy other people, so to speak, but they're not setting aside time for the things they have to do. And so then they have this bifurcation of like, I have a to-do list and I have a calendar. And then you have to mesh them, put them together. You have to set aside specific time to do those tasks. And we know everything takes longer than we expect it to, but and you can move things around, if you can't get it done in that hour, you added some more time tomorrow. But using that and just looking at it. Obviously, I have it also on my phone, so where I am.
It
And but
stinks.
it's yes, it's
Thank God, hallelujah.
So, but also just that putting the tasks on it as well. And I'm not saying not to create a list of tasks and not to prioritize them and what's important and so on like that. But once you have that, schedule it somewhere so that nobody else can impinge on that work.
Exactly. That's so very important. Great advice. Do you use Google Task as well in tandem with your calendar?
Not in tandem with my calendar. I use Google Tasks for certain things, but sort of is mostly, I think, for personal things. And that is another thing, is to kind of separate a little bit some of your private personal things. And I put both personal and business things on my calendar, but sometimes I want, like a shopping list, and that does not have to go on my calendar, kind of thing. Oh, but so another thing on the calendar, and I'm sure you know all about this and everything, but is color coding things. I've thought about that because I have a personal color, and I have an appointment color, and then I have a task color, and my assistant puts things I'm going to promote in my email in a certain color that's like at the beginning of the day. But the other thing is that when things are done, to change the color. So my tasks, my appointments are like the default light blue. And when it's done, everything that's done, I turn to dark blue. And it's like at the end of the week, it's
Oh, I love that.
all dark blue.
That's really good. That's for your own personal tasks. Or do you do
Well,
that as well for your
yes.
appointments and whatnot?
No, and yes, for my appointments too, for everything, absolutely for everything. And then when something's not done, because I don't always do everything that's good, so then you see what you haven't done, and you can move it to some place, some other time to when you have time to do it.
Oh, that's a good little Google hack. I absolutely love that. Good job. I'm glad I asked you that question. Absolutely. So, what's one lesson that you've learned in your business over the years that just sticks with you? You're just like, oh, I always remember that, or I will never do that again.
Well, overall, so something happened, and you're going to love this because you like systems. I had hired a VA, a virtual assistant, and she was actually an employee. It was in my town, and she actually came here, sat and worked here, and then, but she didn't know anything about. She had a marketing background, but not online business. So she was really scared, and I was teaching her everything, and she was writing it down. Everything had to, she wrote down how to do everything because she was afraid she would forget. 6 months later, she left, and she recommended a friend of hers who I still have now, like it's over 10 years, working with the same person. And she moved, and she's now not an employee anymore. She's an independent contractor. But she picked up, we had those procedures. And so she was able to know what to do. And it just saved my, oh my gosh, hundreds of hours it saved. And so we are just religious about everything gets put down in a procedure. And now she's at the point where, she's teaching me things, she's figuring things out. But if she's not in, she's not there all the time. And if I have to do something, I go to the procedure that she wrote and then I can do it. And so it has, lots of different reasons for it. And it just, again, there's that psychology of like having to figure the thing out. There are things that you do every 3 months, every 6 months. And so you think, well, I don't have to write a procedure. But then 6 months from now, you have to do it again and you have no clue and you have to figure the whole thing out again. It's terrible.
It's a
It's,
lot. Yeah, it's a time suck for sure.
yeah. And a frustration of like, what did I do? What did I do? I can't remember.
I
But
love, yeah, SOPs are very important, the standard operating procedures. I have my assistants make them as well because, if they want to bail out or they want to have someone pinch it for them, they have to know how to do it. So it does, what? And I think, since we're talking about young entrepreneurs here, I think, most young entrepreneurs feel that they cannot afford an assistant. They cannot afford to have help. But guess what? I think you can't afford not to. And simply for the reason of you need standard operating procedures. You need, I think that we get stuck in the muck of thinking, oh, it's just me. I'm the island. That's all I can afford. I'm not making enough money. But I know for a fact that when you have helpers, you make more money. So you have to
I
plan.
think that's true first, true, but also you think if you think of it this way, I want to, even if I'm not hiring anybody, the procedures are for me, so I don't forget what to do and then like that. And then once you can hire somebody, it's all there for them. You don't have to train them practically because it's all there. So it makes it so much easier for you to hire somebody because the procedures are there already. So it saves you like the aggravation at the beginning and make from making mistakes. And then when you're ready to hire somebody, it's all there.
And an extra bonus of that, because I help a lot of my clients delegate what they should not be doing, what's below their pay grade. Having that SOP also helps them determine what kind of skills they need for the person that they are going to have come on
Yes,
the job.
you write a job description based on it,
Yeah.
yeah.
Can this person come in and understand what this SOP is?
Right.
Oh, can they do it? Oh, okay. They might be a good candidate for your position.
Right.
Without that, I don't know what she did. I don't know how she did it. So I don't know what skill I need for this person to do
Right.
it.
And by the way, your procedures are part of your IP, your the value of your business, your intellectual property. And I see people who like can't even get into the back end of their website. So okay, they've been outsourcing it to somebody else, but what when that person isn't there, they're screwed. This is your business. It's like you have to not only have that, how to log in and all of that, and some basic things to do on your website. Not only you have it, somewhere saved online, you should have it on a piece of paper somewhere else. I mean, it's this is these are important parts of your business that are, that if you lose them, it's. I have a client whose webmaster died.
That happens. I've had a client the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then what do you do? Because the webmaster has all the login and all the details. Yeah. So something to watch out for sure. So if I know you probably have a valuable resource, and I know you have, I don't know when this is going to be released actually, but I know that you do have a free workbook. So is that what you want to
Well,
offer?
I was going to offer something about email marketing. We haven't
Oh,
talked about
good.
that so much. So, yeah, I wanted to talk about email marketing. So
Okay.
we talked about messaging,
Right.
but before you can have a business, you need to have an audience. You need to have people to sell to.
Good point.
And yeah, it's not like a gift store where people just walk by and they see what's in your window and they come, it doesn't work that way. And so you use your messaging, you start with the messaging, and then you, since you've in the building of your messaging, you figured out what the pain points are. And so you come up with something. I call it a freebie, it's sometimes called lead gen, which I think is just a little too technical. But anyway, free offer that helps people solve a specific problem, a specific pain point that they have. And then you promote that. And by promoting that, you get subscribers. And then once you have subscribers, then you sell to them whatever you have to sell to them. And so, there are other things that you can do. You can promote on social media, you can speak like I'm doing now, whatever it is. But email marketing is just, you can't get around it. You have to do it.
Yeah, for sure.
It's and people are not necessarily going to buy from you right away. And so with email marketing, you stay in touch with people, you build up your authority, they show people your expertise, and then you promote something to them, promote something to promote something to them. So I had something that is called, and I have it written down here. Let's see.
I probably have it in the show notes.
You probably do because I said it.
Yeah. So if you want to learn how to email market, then go right ahead and download the book about email marketing from someone who's been there, done that from a long, long, long time ago and is still teaching it and keeping it current. And her name is Ellen. Yeah. So download.
Anyway, I have the name of it now, so
You do. Okay.
it's 10 techniques for better results from your emails. More engagement, opens and clicks. And it's a little course. It's an email course. So every
Nice.
few days you get another little thing. You get the 10 techniques right away on one sheet, but then you get templates and tools and everything to go through all of them. And getting good results from your emails is like just really hugely important. Every online entrepreneur who's really successful is massively using email marketing.
Yeah, I know we all have to. And that sounds like a great value. I'm going to go ahead and download it because I'm a continual student and there's always something to learn. No matter how long you've been in business, you have new perspectives and you have, oh, yeah, the aha moment. So I'm going to take your course too. So I'm ready.
Okay.
Go ahead. Even if you've been emailing for a long time, we get stuck in the rut. I know I do. I get stuck in my templates. I get stuck in my messaging and coming, having a fresh perspective again, back to that, having someone to look at what you're doing helps you incredibly. So I appreciate that. That's awesome, Ellen. Yes. So is there anything that I should have asked you that you wanted to talk about? I'm so glad you brought up the email part.
Yes, the email part was one of the things that I really did want to mention. And these days, starting about a couple of years ago, there's some technical requirements that to avoid getting called spam, your email be putting in the spam folder, or if you're using Gmail, we'll call talking about Google, the promotions tab and so on like that. And so there's just a lot of things that you can do with your subject lines. And all of these types of things. And so it's really important that not only that you write emails that are engaging. I'm a big fan of storytelling. I start each of my emails with a little story. I've been writing about my granddaughter lately. But all of your emails, everything, even that story, has to connect to their pain point, what they came to you for. And so when you write emails like that are related to what when you pick up people via your free offer that have the problem that you can solve, and then you talk about that, then you engage them and they're more likely to open your emails and buy from you. So yeah, I think that's basically that thing of talking about, the messaging is the start of it, but then you need to continue the relationship with people, and emails just, a post on Facebook or a post on wherever, Instagram or something, it just goes, gets people scroll past it so fast. But email, you can be there regularly in their inbox and you can create a relationship over a long period of time. That's something unique about it.
Yeah, I totally agree. Even though people say they're inundated with emails, I know for a fact that, I've been posting an e-tip every Sunday for whatever 20 years, and I know that my clients look for it. And
Right.
so, even if
That's
it
right.
goes into promotions or whatever, which I'm going to read about how you're going to keep that people out of that. I hear about that all the time and I try to implement. I'll take your course. But I know that they look forward to hearing from you, especially if you do have the storytelling going on with it. If you're talking about someone else that something happened, then they can relate. So thank you. You reminded me of all the things that I've learned in the past that I forget all the time. This is what we do as professionals. We remind each other what we used to know so that we can do it again.
That's right. That's right.
And for the newbies out there, listen to this because this is a girl who's been here, done that, and you know that she knows what she's talking about. I know too, because I've known Ellen for, we've known each other for a very long time.
Yeah,
Our
yeah.
paths have crossed. over the years.
Okay.
Anyhow, thank you guys for listening. I really appreciate you being here. If you like this podcast, please give us a thumbs up. Better yet, give us a comment because comments help a lot. So that'll help Ellen, that'll help myself, and it'll help you by listening to this content and downloading her course as well. Anyhow, until next time, you guys, we'll see you. And thank you, Ellen. I appreciate you being a
Thank
guest.
you so much. It was just lots of fun. I enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Thank you. Hey, thanks for listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you want to hear more, feel free to subscribe on the platform of your choice. Also, if you feel so inclined, I would truly appreciate a good rating from you to me. Have a stellar day.